I glance up to notice a woman with spiky blonde hair, maybe mid-20s, in line at the intake window. She's dressed in snug-fitting royal blue velour pants and a yellow hoodie. A toweringly handsome black man in a shiny new Nike jacket, baggy jeans, and unlaced athletic shoes sidles up to her back, puts his arms around her waist, and says, "Good morning, sweetheart." She elbows him hard and turns to give him a dirty look. He laughs and heads to the back of the line. When she is finished at the window, she sits along the wall. After the Nike jacketed guy gets through the line, he saunters to a chair, walking right by her without a glance. 2 minutes later, she looks down the wall to see where he is, gets up and moves to the empty chair beside him, puts her hand on his leg and her head on his shoulder. I am surprised. What prompted all that? Has she decided to make a stab at a relationship with this guy? Does she already know him and they were just playing around the whole time? These and many other questions will be answered in the next episode of The Waiting Room at Social Services. In the meantime, a woman announces the class for general assistance. As before, a security guard escorts us to the classroom. We check our names off on a sign-in sheet at the door and take a seat. The instructor, a lady with a close-cropped afro and dressed in light gray sweats, gives the same speech on following directions and paying attention that we heard in the food stamp class. Then she says, "Listen, I know this is a lot, you all being here applying for welfare. I know it's difficult. Life can get tough and that can be depressing." "That's right, we're all depressed. You've got to be if you're so down and out that you're here today. Look, I'm depressed too. My mama died 8 years ago and I still miss her. So it's nothing to be ashamed about, being depressed. It's just part of life sometimes. Now, I'm not saying you're crazy. I'm just saying that you're depressed. No offense." Okay, now that we've got that out of the way, I'm going to show you a video on the application process. Then you're going to take a mental health test. An Asian girl sitting next to me raises her hand. "If we don't pass the test, will we be disqualified?" No, the test is just to determine if you need to see the county psychiatrist or not. "Don't worry about it, honey. Just answer the questions best you can," she explains. The video lasts 10 minutes. Then the instructor passes out the test. It's one of those where you have to fill in the little circle with the number 2 pencil. 53 questions. She tells us that we can jump ahead rather than wait for the recorded monotone voice that slowly reads every question and repeats the same multiple choice responses after each one. Never, hardly ever, sometimes, frequently, or all of the time. The questions cover a variety of issues. Here are some random examples. "Are you afraid to ride public transit? Do you ever feel like punching someone? Do you think that God is punishing you for your sins?" I get through them quickly, then sit there for a good 20 minutes trying to tune out the guy on the recording. Finally, we are dismissed and told to sit in the waiting room until our names are called to receive our next appointment, where we will meet with our intake worker to determine eligibility. We are informed to arrive an hour early for the interview. My appointment is in the afternoon at 2 o'clock. I arrive 1 hour early as instructed. This time I get out my notebook. In a few minutes, the door to the back office opens and an older black woman steps out. "Okay, people, this is not welfare as you might think it is. This is a work program. If you can't work, you should leave. Go see your doctor and get a letter to verify your disability. Otherwise, stick around. Today we have 5 social workers on duty, and there's only 26 of you here. That's not bad. Consider yourselves lucky. I've been here when only 4 workers have had to interview 30 applicants. Now, if everything runs smoothly, we should get out of here before 5. Here's how it works. We call your name in no particular order. Things don't go alphabetical around here, and you can't take a number like at the deli. That means that you just have to wait. If you're still here at 4:45, though, you'll have to get a new appointment. We close right at 5. I'm sorry if you don't get called today. Hey, listen, on your way home, stop to buy a lotto ticket. Your luck can only get better, honey. I settle back in my chair and continue writing. Other applicants pass the time on their cell phones. I wonder how people who are destitute can afford such luxuries, but then this is America. We find ways to indulge. After a good 20 minutes or so, a social worker comes out to call the first person in for their interview. I see how this process could take a while. I figure I'll get a fair amount of work done. In a few minutes, the elevator opens and out steps the same couple from the waiting room scene of the other day. You know, the spiky blonde and the unlaced shoe guy. She approaches the intake window and plops down a stack of papers on the counter. Her man turns to look over the crowd in the waiting room and smiles as he finds a buddy of his leaning against the windowsill. He ambles to the back wall. The hum of the waiting room is pierced by the blonde shouting at the clerk. What do you mean I have to make a new appointment? I'm only a half hour late. The blonde's mane squeeze hears his woman's protest and bolts to the front counter. Look, I don't have time to make another goddamn appointment. I got more important shit to do than hang around here. The boyfriend bellows. Then he looks across the room toward his friend and says, shit, I'd still be asleep if it weren't for having to dick around here. What's $160 gonna get me? He snatches the papers off the counter and hurls them across the room, then saunters toward the elevator. His velour girl scoops them up as he yells, leave that shit there. We don't need it. The drama is interrupted by a cell phone ringing directly behind me. Hello, beautiful daughter of mine. How was school today? That sounds good. Hey, listen, I gotta call you back. I'm in this thing right now. I'll be home later. Daddy loves you. A couple hours pass without any further commotion. A few people come in to pick up their mail. I'm absorbed in my notes when my name is called. The same security officer from the food stamp class escorts me through the back offices. I'm directed to the last cubicle on the right. An Asian woman, smartly dressed in a navy pencil skirt and neatly pressed Tattersall shirt, stands up from her desk, extends her hand, asks me to please sit down. She looks over my application for a minute, then says, you know, general assistance isn't really much. The maximum award is $158 a month, which you can draw for 9 months during one calendar year. After that, if you still require assistance, you have to wait 3 months to reapply. And by the way, the money is given out as a loan. Oh, I had no idea that welfare is a loan. Well, it's not like anyone is going to come knocking on your door to repay it. However, it will be deducted from your tax returns, she responds. In order to receive ongoing benefits, you must show proof of applying for at least 3 jobs per week. We'll issue a bus pass for you. Okay, I understand. Hey, listen, is this your first time applying for government assistance? Well, it's been a while, I answer. About 40 years. I thought so. You seem disoriented. A lot has changed in 40 years. Just to let you know how things work now, every county is different. If you lived across the bay, the cash is not given out as a loan, but you are expected to work in exchange for benefits. Doing what? She grins. Well, you don an orange vest and clean the streets. My mind flashes on the image of myself in a day-glow orange vest, dirty jeans and clunky work boots, stooped over the gutter in San Francisco, picking up trash. How many hours per week do you work, and is the dollar amount the same per month? I'm not sure about the hour requirements, but the cash benefit is about the same, she answers. Well, I still have to get my landlord's signature and a few other documents copied. Then I'll mail everything all in. I sure appreciate you helping me today. It's my pleasure, and I wish you the best of luck, she responds. I doze in and out of sleep that night. Somewhere in my lucid dreams, Tilly Olson's opening line, I stand here ironing, from her story, Tell Me a Riddle, circles my mind like a ticker tape. I get up, turn on my computer, search for the story, download a copy and read it through. Then I lean back in my chair. I stood ironing when my son was an infant back in 71. I ironed his cloth diapers, the cotton flannel ones I sewed on that Kenmore machine, the one whose bobbin never let a thread go by without puckering it. I stood there ironing dozens of diapers in my kitchen, on the board that dropped from the wall, daily pressing out the wrinkles of my crumpled life, bearing down on worries. Will the water get shut off tomorrow? Will the landlord let us go another month? What to fix for dinner? That last one was easy. Never need to survey my cupboards coming up with recipes. The sparse content dictated what to cook. I remember a time when all I had was a box of raisins, a sack of flour, a bottle of corn oil, and a cylinder of salt. My refrigerator's interior gleamed white against the red cabbage, living lonely in there with the quart of milk and a half dozen eggs. Dinner that night was a cabbage raisin pie. I fluted the edge as lovely as my grandmother's. I close my computer, head for my laundry room. It's 2 a.m. I open the cabinet and pull down the ironing board. Plug in my iron, fill it with water, get out a stack of pillowcases. I stand here ironing. Without my children banging old pots and spoons on that kitchen floor, without my husband hunched over his old chemistry books, preparing for the exam he never took. Without the hum of that old Kenmore stitching up all those baby layettes. I stand here ironing now, pressing stories out, smoothing wrinkled seams, folded in among the poor.